Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. Ronald Acuna Jr. has made history as the only member of the 40-70 club, Francisco Lindor joins the 30-30 club, and Bryce Harper seems to be all the way back. This is our final regular season episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Obviously, we have an off-season schedule planned. We are going to start on October 13th, so a little bit of a break, and then bi-weekly episodes from there on out until the regular season and spring training, of course. Then we'll get into the more regular scheduled programs. But for now, it's going to be bi-weekly starting October 13th. So if you want to listen to the off-season episodes of the podcast, which we'll go over some mock drafts and interview some of your favorite writers at Pitcher List, talk about all of the things getting ready for next season, maybe reflect on things that we did well or poorly this season, just all of that good stuff. So if you want to listen to all of that, start listening on October 13th. But we have an episode right here for you to recap the final week of fantasy baseball. And I have some great news, John. I won my home league this season. I am beyond ecstatic. I'm so happy. It's my second time winning this league. I got to hoist the trophy yet again. If you want to see what that trophy looks like for anyone listening, you can check it out on my Twitter or X. It's at Regicidal. So go and check that out because the trophy is awesome. That's one really cool thing about our league. But I am so happy to have won that. And I've done really well overall this season. John, how are you and how have you done for the entirety of this year?
Yeah, I am officially fully checked out on fantasy baseball. Last week I said I was getting close. And this week I am completely checked out. Of course, I'm also slightly checked out on the regular season because the Twins clinched the division last Friday, and so I'm literally waiting for playoffs to begin. So it's nice to take maybe a tiny little break from the baseball madness, but I'm going to be right back into it starting next week. But yeah, in terms of fantasy performance, there's two pitcherless leagues that I'm in. I finished fourth in one of them, and then I think like ninth in another one, so not great results, but we mentioned on the pod last week, I finished second in my home league, which was pretty awesome. First time I've placed in that league in the top four, so always nice to see progress in that way. And technically TGFBI is still happening. I'm third in my league right now. It doesn't really look like I'm gonna be moving, you know, anywhere up or down really in those standings, but there's still chances to improve in the overall. I'm 63rd right now in the overall, and I'm hoping maybe someone's going to hit a bunch of home runs over the weekend and get me to top 50 if possible.
That would be really, really nice. Yeah, for me as an entirety for the season, I believe I was in six leagues. I did really poorly in a startup dynasty league that I joined, and the funny thing about that is I literally drafted trying to win this season, and I came in like 12th out of 14. So <Yeah. laughs> that doesn't make much sense. So it was a newer format. I haven't been in many dynasty leagues. I was in one before, but then it kind of collapsed. So this was my first real startup dynasty league. I took over a team in the other dynasty league. So it's a different experience, and I guess I played it a little poorly. I have to adjust and get better at that format. But for the other leagues, in my NFBC Satellite League, I am floating between third and fourth, so I might be able to squeeze out a third place finish and cash in that, which would be excellent. TGFBI, I am currently sixth in my league and I think 190th overall, so pretty good. One of my better finishes in TGFBI, which isn't the greatest, but hey, I'll take any sort of improvement. Then obviously I won my home league, which I said before, and then in the other leagues that I'm in, just some Yahoo leagues that are for money or other NFBC leagues, I've cashed in both of them. So pretty good year for me. I'm very happy. The home league was the most important to me, obviously, so very excited about that. But overall, just a great fantasy season, and I think we had a really good fantasy season podcast-wise. I mean, we got some of the numbers back and saw what we did, and we are just so thankful that all of you are listening and enjoy the show. So for anyone who is listening or just enjoying it throughout every single week, please send us an email. Make sure you tweet at us. Tell us that you won your league or how you did or things that you want us to improve on or do more of in the future, because that's all we want to do is improve and get better for all of you so that you can have the most enjoyable listening experience and succeed in your fantasy leagues. Now, before we get into the news and everything, John, we have to talk about Ronald Acuña Jr. We don't highlight him at all in the rest of the podcast, but I wanted to just take a quick moment to talk about how historic of a season this is. And we kind of did this last podcast, but he officially hit the 40-70 club this past week. And it's just so impressive. Like we said this before, I don't really know of another fantasy season that was as strong as this one, because this is something we really haven't seen before, especially in our lifetimes, because sure, there's been other seasons where people had ridiculous stat lines and whatnot. But for our generation, this might be the best fantasy season that we've ever seen. I mean, 70 stolen bases and 40 home runs while having over 100 RBI, over 100 runs, and over 320 batting average. I mean, he's just done it all, and it really needs to be stressed that this is one of the best seasons and fantasy seasons of all time. Like, he made his own club of 40 home runs and 70 stolen bases. I mean, what do you have to say about Acuña? I just think this is so impressive, and we just have to talk about it because it is the best fantasy season that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually crazy what he did from a fantasy perspective, because like 70 stolen bases is a lot for sure, right? But he coupled that with 40 homers, right? Like there's definitely stolen base specialists, right, in the league. I think, you know, who comes to mind include
Esteury Ruiz,
yeah, right? Like he actually, I think he's at like 63, 64 stolen
bases. Yeah,
he's
in the mid-60s.
Right. So, but the problem is he doesn't really offer anything else, right?
Right.
Acuña's doing this and also hitting 40 homers at the same time. So, yeah, just his ability to help out in fantasy. I believe he's currently second in the National League in terms of average, right behind Luis Arraez. Obviously, the runs and RBIs are incredible for Acuña, like truly a five-tool fantasy player. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, other guys who are close, like Freddie Freeman's kind of in the conversation. Mookie Betts is in the conversation there. But Acuña's just blown them out of the water in pretty much every single metric. So, yeah, just incredible performance from him this season. And the crazy thing is he's still so young, right? He's only 25 years old. He's turning 26 in a couple months. He has a long, long road ahead of him. And if he can do 40-70 at this age, like I'm very curious how his career is going to continue growing. Like, I don't think he's going to necessarily match 70 stolen bases as he gets older. That's just obvious. But the power output is also very impressive. And it's nice to see that he's basically fully back from the injuries that had sapped his couple past seasons.
This definitely feels like a career year for Ronald Acuña Jr., of course. And we say that because, I mean, 40-70, that's going to be hard to replicate no matter what. But if there's anyone to be able to do that, it probably would be Acuña, especially because, like you said, he's so young. And I saw something on Twitter where I think the Braves' main five players, of which are Acuña, Albies, Riley, Olsen, and Murphy, are under team control for the next, like, 5 years together. So, right. Just thinking about that in a team context and in a fantasy context, you have to get one of those four at least, you know, disregard Sean Murphy for this point because his playing time is all over the place, but just those four guys. I believe Michael Harris is in the discussion for that as well, so maybe we'll just say those five guys. So Harris, Acuña, Albies, Riley, and Olsen. You have to prioritize getting one of those in your drafts, right? Like, you need one of these guys to be on your team, because the runs, RBI, stolen base, homer output from these guys is just astronomical. If they're going to be a core five players moving forward, I have to have at least one of them on my team.
Right, because if one player does well, they all kind of do well, right?
Yeah.
Like Matt Olson's RBIs, he's batting in Acuna and Albies and things like that, right? So you even get just one of those guys, you get to – it's almost like you get to see some production from the other players as well. And then not to mention, they also have Spencer Strider, right? One of the best pitchers in the league on their team as well. So, yeah, that Atlanta team is just an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, it's really, really scary what Atlanta's going to do for the NL East for the next five seasons at least. Like, I'm scared as a Mets fan because they are just a juggernaut. It's incredible. But the one thing I have to say before we move on with Acuna, so he stole his 70th base, and obviously he already had 40 steals before he hit 40 home runs. And 70 stolen bases was like the milestone for steals after he hit his 40th homer.
Right.
He slid into second, stole the base. It was at home in Atlanta. And he basically took the bag out of the ground and held it above his head, and the crowd went wild. And then it was the 10th inning of a game that the Cubs are trying to make the postseason. So it was Cubs versus Braves. And obviously, this is a moment that needs to be celebrated, right? Acuna, 40-70, never been done before. He deserves the applause and the celebration. And in that context, of course, it was the 10th inning of a very close game, of a game that had playoff implications for the Cubs. But he basically lifted up the bag, took it back, and then they played a little video montage on the Jumbotron to honor Ronald Acuna. And then they got back into gameplay. Do you see anything wrong with that at all? Because personally, my opinion, I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's only been a few people who have made the 40-40 club, and Acuna did it the right way. He didn't hoist every bag above his head after 40 homers. He just did it for the 70th, and rightfully so. That's a monumental bag stolen right there. So, in my opinion, nothing wrong with that. If anybody's upset with it, that's just ridiculous. Obviously, the Cubs are trying to make the playoffs, but come on, man. It's something that's never been done before in baseball. Let him celebrate, right? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I will say, like, doing this in the middle of a baseball game, like, baseball is, like, unique in the fact that there isn't, like, you know, technically a clock, right? I guess we do have a pitch clock nowadays, right? And, you know, there's been exceptions this year made for, you know, like, standing ovations and things like that, which, you know, makes sense, and I think this is kind of in the vein of that. That being said, though, context, of course, is, like, that's, at, you know, like, the beginning of an at-bat, where this is in the middle of an at-bat. I don't necessarily fault him for you know, getting excited, celebrating, you know, lifting up the base and all that. But I probably would have maybe given like a delay of game penalty or something like that. You know, just like a an extra strike to the batter. You know, something like that. Just because in that situation, it's still kind of in the middle of the game. But at the end of the day, though, you know, it kind of falls in line with what MLB has done this season in terms of, you know, team celebrations and things like that. I mean, I totally get it why they didn't do anything. But, you know, like you said, it's an important game. The Cubs are trying to figure out if they can still stay alive in the playoff race. 70 is obviously an awesome number. You know, if they had maybe done it where, you know, after the inning's done, he comes out for a curtain call or something like that, that makes more sense to me. But, yeah, I don't really feel slighted either way. Baseball is baseball. There's no timer, so it's not like it's the biggest deal that they took a little extra time to celebrate.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I can see both sides of it. There was actually a really cool Twitter thread by Joe2KOol, and he basically gave a thread and video of every person to make the 40-40 club and what happened. Basically, Canseco set the precedent of lifting the bag and taking it, and that happened at home, I believe, and then Barry Bonds did it on the road against a division rival, and the same thing happened. They delayed the game. They gave him a round of applause. He held the bag up. He took it, and then Soriano, A-Rod, same thing with those guys. So it's been a tradition, and obviously, like you said, it's in the middle of an at-bat, so that's a little bit more tough, but most of these happen in the middle of an at-bat as well, and I just think it needs to be celebrated more so often. I mean, it's something that you just don't see. It's one of the best seasons in the history of the game, so celebrate it. I mean, obviously, sure, if you're a bitter Cubs fan and it happened, I see the gripe. I get it. I understand. You're trying to make the playoffs, but come on, just acknowledge that this is a thing that just doesn't happen regularly and appreciate that. It's just like celebrating Ohtani after he does anything because it's remarkable. You have to. It's something that's important for baseball. But enough of that. Acuña, fantastic season. We are just in awe. I am literally going to make a shirt that says, I survived Ronald Acuña Jr. in fantasy baseball 2023 and wear it because I won my home league and I did not have Ronald Acuña Jr. So yeah. I technically survived his onslaught. So very happy about that. But before we get into the rest of this episode, I'd like to remind all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL. And you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcast on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, we're on all of them. So make sure that you subscribe to the podcast and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed listening to us for the entire season as we move into the off-season segments. So make sure you leave that 5-star review. We'd appreciate it greatly. Now, moving on to the MLB news since our last podcast, we start with a bunch of Cardinals. Nolan Arenado of the Cardinals was placed on the 10-day IL on Friday, September 22nd, with lower back spasms. His 2023 season will come to an end, and as I mentioned in the last podcast, it seemed like he packed it in early anyways. Maybe it was due to back spasms, maybe it was due to the Cardinals being eliminated, but regardless, he just looked like he was giving 30%, and you never want to see that, so at least he gets to just rest the rest of the season. I actually have a funny story, John, about Nolan Arenado. I believe it was in 2019 where the Rockies played the Mets and I went to Citi Field. And Arenado is one of my favorite players, believe it or not. I had a bunch of his cards. I have a jersey that my friend got me from Coors Field that he actually went to and brought me back the jersey. I had him on my fantasy team for a while in my keeper league. So I loved Nolan Arenado. I just love the way he plays the game. I love his defense. I love the way he swings the bat. Just everything about Nolan I really like. So I wore my Arenado jersey. Don't worry, I had a Mets jersey in my backpack and switched to it for the actual game. But as they were warming up, we got there early, I had my Arenado jersey on, and I had a ball, and I was like, Nolan, sign my ball. You know, I have your jersey. I turned around, showed him, and he acknowledged me. He waved to me. He looked at me, and he kind of gave me like a one-second kind of gesture, you know? And then he went into the stands, took a picture with like a random group of people. I think they knew him or something, or it was part of something because he just went in there and then he gave me the 1 second. He went into the dugout and never came back out. And I understand that he was probably busy. He's getting ready for a game. I don't blame him at all, but he gave me the look. He waved to me and he gave me a 1 second gesture that I truly believe that he was coming back out and was going to sign my ball. And he didn't. Granted, you know, I was what, 25 years old at the time. He doesn't owe me anything. I'm just a grown adult that's a kid at heart. And I would have loved that autograph, but I was kind of slighted by that. So, Nolan, you hurt me a little bit. If you ever happen to listen to this, I'd like an autograph ball because you kind of gave me that 1 second gesture and it's been, I don't know, 5 years. So, I'm still waiting. Moving on to Paul Goldschmidt of the Cardinals. He missed 2 straight games due to back tightness, but was back in the lineup on Friday. Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals was placed on the 10-day IL on Thursday, September 21st, with tendonitis in his left wrist. That will end his 2023 season. Luis Robert Jr. of the White Sox was placed on the 10-day IL on Tuesday, September 26th, with a mild left MCL sprain. Even though the injury is considered minor, there's still a 2-4 week timetable for recovery, so it will end his 2023 season. He finishes with 38 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 90 runs, and 80 RBI. John, 2 home runs away from a 40-20 season. If the White Sox weren't so bad, this would be an incredible year for Luis Robert, but it kind of just got wasted.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned on, I think, this podcast as well as the newsletter a little bit. Like, Luis Robert, like, because he was healthy, he actually looked a little bit like an MVP caliber player, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is no one really cares about it because the White Sox are terrible. And so this is easily his best season that he's ever had, I think. And so with that knowledge, it kind of sucks that it's ending an injury. That's just the most classic Luis Robert way to finish out a season. But at the end of the day, it's very encouraging that he managed to play this many games. And of course, you can't really say that, okay, because he was healthy this year, he's going to be healthy in the future. But it is kind of promising to show that, like, hey, at least he was able to survive an entire season. Can he do it again next year? I think you're going to draft him like he could do it. There might be a little bit of risk baked in where maybe you let a round go before you pick him up. But at the end of the day, he's so good when he's healthy that it feels like it's a missed opportunity if you don't pick him up if he's available at your spot.
I completely agree with that. I mean, 40-20 is just super impressive. And if the White Sox improve a little bit, obviously they're not looking to get better in 2024. At least right. I don't see the moves they can make to get better. We'll see if they sign any free agents. But yeah, Luis Robert, just an absolute stud. By far his best season to date. And if he keeps this up, once again, he will win an MVP at some point. I mean, it's inevitable. So it's pretty crazy to think that the AL MVP race is between two injured guys that both have terrible teams. So Ohtani and Robert, I mean, obviously Ohtani's the MVP, but Robert had a great season, is definitely in the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Max Scherzer of the Rangers threw a light bullpen session on Wednesday. He's trying to return from a low-grade strain of the teres major muscle in his right shoulder. The injury is expected to take 8 to 12 weeks to recover, so Scherzer is really pushing himself to try to return in time for the playoffs. I don't know if that's the smartest thing, but obviously he feels like he owes it to the Rangers after trading for him to be out there and compete for a World Series title. Brandon Nimmo of the Mets has an AC joint injury in his right shoulder and will undergo an MRI on Friday. His season is most likely over despite the severity of the injury because the Mets are just out of it and there's no need to push him. Jeff McNeil of the Mets was placed on the 10-day IL on Thursday, September 28th with a left elbow sprain. It was later announced that McNeil has been diagnosed with a partial UCL tear. He's expected to avoid surgery and will try PRP treatment with the goal of being 100% recovered by the beginning of spring training. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, I don't like anything with the whole UCL tear deal for McNeil, but hopefully it'll be okay with this PRP treatment. Yandy Diaz of the Rays missed two straight games due to right hamstring tightness. However, he returned to the lineup on Friday. Brandon Lau of the Rays was placed on the 10-day IL on Saturday, September 23rd, with a fractured right patella. After fouling a ball off of his knee, Lau is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks, which means even if the Rays make the World Series, he probably won't be back for that. Luke Raley of the Rays was placed on the 10-day IL on Friday, September 22nd, with a cervical strain. Royce Lewis of the Twins was placed on the 10-day IL on Friday, September 22nd, with a left hamstring strain. He played in a simulated game on Wednesday and could be activated from the IL when first eligible this Sunday. Carlos Correa of the Twins will not rejoin the Twins before the end of the regular season. He's been out with plantar fasciitis and will hopefully be able to return for the playoffs. Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins felt renewed forearm tightness following his rehab start on Thursday. Last podcast, I said that he might be able to make one more start in the regular season, but he has been shut down with what is now being called a right UCL sprain. Tough break for Sandy, but obviously those innings caught up to him, and you just hate to see it. He was a unicorn by being able to pitch so deep into games and going so often, but now he's at a little bit of a standstill. Yuri Perez of the Marlins was placed on the 15-day IL on Saturday, September 23rd, with left SI joint inflammation. This will effectively end Perez's impressive rookie season, and if the Marlins are able to secure a playoff berth, Perez will be eligible to return prior to the start of the NLDS. So Marlins fans, hey, you might be able to see Perez in the postseason if you make it there. Luis Arraez of the Marlins has missed 4 straight games due to a left ankle sprain. Chaz McCormick of the Astros returned to the lineup on Friday after missing 1 game due to a sore back. Charlie Morton of the Braves was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday, September 24th, with right index finger inflammation. Morton is now unlikely to be available through at least the NLDS. J.D. Davis of the Giants was placed on the 10-day IL on Thursday, retroactive to September 27th, with a left shoulder strain. And last but not least, speaking of the Giants, Gabe Kapler was dismissed as the manager of the Giants. So, very interesting that his tenure has come to an end as the manager of the San Francisco Giants. John, any last comments on this list of news?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all these affect those playoff teams. I mean, pretty much the last few are all playoff teams, right? So Braves, you know, Astros, Marlins, Twins, Rays. Even if it's not for fantasy reasons, you really hope that these guys are able to get back with their teams before the end of, basically when they need to be there in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like the Rays have lost their entire team this season. I feel like the Twins have had like the same injured guys every single month. I feel like the Marlins have lost a lot of people. The Braves pretty much have a decimated rotation. I mean, Max Fried is out, Morton's out. Who's pitching for that insane team? Like, so many X factors in this postseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the Rays themselves, it's kind of impressive that they've managed to stay afloat this long, considering that they essentially had to replace half their pitching rotation.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Rasmussen, Springs, McClanahan. There's more that I'm forgetting as well. There's so many people that got injured on this team. It's actually really impressive, like you said, that they are actually in the hunt and could have won the division. I mean, pretty remarkable. So shout out to the Rays, because even though you have your backs against the wall, you still find a way to get it done. It's pretty impressive. But before we get into the weekly performance recap, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain, and they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. to sign up for your trial today.
All right, we are back, and it's time for the weekly performance recap, the last of the season. Just a reminder, we get most of our hitter and pitcher highlights from the daily articles on the Pitcher List website. The hitter recap articles and SP roundup articles are incredible resources to read through to see how players performed each day. But John, who did well over this weekend?
Yeah, we'll start out with one guy who both you and I really liked beginning of the season, Manny Machado. 4-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 3 RBIs on Friday. Basically, I hesitate to call Machado a disappointment this season, but pretty much like his own baseball team, this has been one of his worst seasons. He is dealing with an elbow injury. He has been basically DHing full-time for the Padres for essentially the last month. But, you know, he still has some power. He hit 2 homers in this one. One off Matthew Liberatore, which caught him to 30 this season. The slash line's not pretty. 258, 320, 465. Basically some of his worst numbers of his career. But the 30 homers is still kind of evidence that, like, hey, the power's still there. We obviously aren't sure how this elbow surgery is going to affect him early in the season next year. That being said, he's clearly not going to be the guy who's going to be taken at the end of the first round or beginning of the second round like he was this year. But he still could be some really nice value in drafts next year if he falls, let's just say, to the end of the second round. One guy who's going to have some interesting fantasy draft stock next year is Christian Encarnacion Strand. On Saturday, he went 3-for-5 with a homer, 2 runs, and 4 RBIs. The Reds actually lost this game 13-12, just trading off homers with the Pirates. And I believe they are now officially out of the playoff race. Or actually, no, they're barely in. Encarnacion Strand, among, you know, a bunch of other young Reds players, has been pretty solid this season. He obviously, you know, did a lot in this game. 4 RBIs to add to that, you know, 12 RBIs total from the team. He got his 10th homer of the season in that game as well. Over 60 played so far this season. He's got 111 WRC plus with 12 homers and 34 RBI. Not bad for the rookie. And rounding out the weekend, John Birdie of the Miami Marlins went 2-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. Birdie had 4 home runs entering this season on Sunday, so having 2 more is kind of impressive. Against the Brewers, he was just electric. 2 really mammoth home runs, actually, from John Birdie, which is not expected. Obviously, Birdie, if you drafted him this season, it was for his speed, not for his power. because he's got 41 bags last year, leading the majors. This year, however, he's disappointed severely in that category, 16 stolen bases only. But he does have more runs and RBIs compared to last year. So if you picked him up in a deep league, I had him in TGFBI for a couple weeks here and there. It hasn't been a complete loss. He actually also has a career high average of 295, which is actually like a pretty decent number for Birdie. It's just the problem is that it just isn't translating to much on a Marlins team that, frankly, this entire season has struggled with offense until Jake Berger joined the team over the trade deadline. So, yeah, John Birdie, not really one of those guys who has really capitalized on his season last year, but he's had some pretty decent stats this year and has looked okay in deep league appearances.
It's so hard to roster someone like John Birdie because we know the upside, which is 41 stolen bases that he had last season. But now that stolen bases are a little bit more common, he just doesn't provide really anything else. And if he was batting leadoff regularly for the Marlins, then having Luis Arraez behind him and then Josh Bell, Jake Berger, Jazz Chisholm, Jorge Soler, if he was leading off regularly and stealing 30 to 50 bases and scoring 100 runs, batting 290 like he is this season, he could be viable. But he doesn't play every day. The stolen bases seem to have taken a dip, and maybe that's just because of playing time. The power's not there at all. I don't know. It's very interesting with John Birdie. If he had a solidified spot in the one or two hole for that team, I would like him a lot. But now that stolen bases are a little bit more common, it's hard to get behind John Birdie. But good season, good salvaging of the season, I should say, for John Birdie here. Christian Encarnacion-Strand is going to be awesome next season. I'm very excited to draft him. I wonder where he'll go because the upside is there, but first base is one of those positions where you really get in at the top, and then if you don't get one of those top options, all of the middling guys like the CJ Crones and the Christian Walkers, which now should be in the upper echelon tier, at least I think so, but those kind of guys, you know, the Joey Vados and Anthony Rizzos and all that tier kind of just clump together and you just take whichever one you want, Josh Bell, Encarnacion-Strand. So I see Encarnacion-Strand going at the top of that list mainly because of the upside, right? Like his home games are at Great American Small Park and the lineup at the Reds is getting better. So I like CES a lot. I think he's going to be very good for next season. And then, yeah, Manny Machado has had such a weird season because he's struggled for the most part, but he's still hit 30 homers, still batting 260. He's played through injury this season. He landed on the IL for the first time in like 9 years. Just very weird season for the Padres in total. And yeah, even though it was a disappointing season for Machado, I think his value next season will be worth taking him again, especially if he addresses that injury that he has right now and can get through that and be healthy for next season. I think the Padres are going to be better. I think Machado is going to be better. And if he's going in the second, third, fourth round, somewhere around there, I'm not sure yet, I kind of like his value.
Yeah, especially fourth round. Like, holy crap. Like,
imagine. Healthy, yeah.
That's a top three third baseman right there.
Right.
That you're getting well after, like, you know, that's where Gunnar Henderson was going in drafts a little bit. He was more like fifth, sixth round, really.
Yeah.
But that, like, Gunnar Henderson had a lot of hype behind him, but he was still only maybe like a, you know, in that 6 to 8 range for third baseman when he was getting drafted. So, yeah, imagine getting a guy at that stage who could be a top three guy. That's pretty great.
Really, really good value potentially for Machado.
Right. Well, moving on to pitchers, a couple guys who have surprised or struggled this season. Shane Bieber starting on Friday for Cleveland. 5 innings, 4 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. Mainly notable because he had been basically on the 60 DIL for over 2 months. And this is also his final season in Cleveland contract-wise. They could re-sign him, but knowing Cleveland, they'll probably just have him walk. And let's be honest, it kind of makes sense because he has not looked really good. The pitches in this one didn't look great, just not well located. Fastball was sitting at 90 miles an hour, which has been a big thing with Bieber, as he's just pretty much steadily lost velocity every single season. I mean, I still remember 2 years ago when Bieber was supposed to be a top three pitcher. I had picked him up actually in one of my drafts, kind of expecting him to be in the same echelon as, you know, Garrett Cole or Corbin Burns. And yeah, that clearly did not happen. Of course, that season was mostly due to injury, not necessarily because of quality. But it just hasn't really looked good. He did have a little bit of a renaissance season last year, finishing with 2.88 ERA and 1.04 WHIP in 200 innings. So if we just maybe pretend that this season doesn't count, then we just look at a guy who's only 28, has an elite CSW. But it's going to be interesting to see where Bieber signs next year, and second, kind of where his pitching ability is going to be in the next season. On Saturday, John Means for Baltimore started 7.1 innings with only one earned run, one hit, one walk, and four strikeouts. He's pretty much on the opposite end of Bieber in the coming back from injury spectrum. Obviously, he's been out for a long time because of Tommy John, and he's had three starts this season. He's steadily improved in pretty much every single one. So, you know, the line looks great, but ultimately, was it a good start? It's hard to say. He was facing the Guardians, who are an incredibly aggressive swinging team. They don't necessarily swing for power, but they do try to get a lot of hits and dunk their way around the field. And so Means, even though his locations weren't that great, he was definitely able to get the Guardians to hit into a lot of outs. Obviously, going that far with only four strikeouts is maybe a little bit of evidence of that. But it's a good sign for next year, at least, that he hasn't completely fallen apart, that he's, you know, fully back from injury. Now he gets another full offseason to rehab and come back to be, you know, probably the ace of the Baltimore staff. So we'll see how that all works for him, but it's at least good to see that he looks at least healthy back from Tommy John. And then finally on Sunday, Christopher Sanchez of the Philadelphia Phillies, 7 innings with 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. Sanchez might be one of the revelations of this season, or really just kind of absolute deep sleeper picks. He currently holds a 3.48 ERA and a 1.06 whip over 17 starts. Just incredible numbers there from a guy who basically was a nothing burger before this season. Of course, the question is if Sanchez will continue this form of excellence next year. This year, he's been relying a lot on a sinker-changeup combo to dominate opponents. And while he does have a slider, it actually doesn't really get whiffs. It's more of a called strike pitch for him. And so it's hard to say if that's really going to be a useful pitch in the next season if he can't get more whiffs with it. If that does become more effective, then he finally has two secondaries that he can play with. He can attack both sides of the plate then a little bit easier, maybe go a little bit deeper into games. But hey, he did get 10 strikeouts at this one, so clearly something is working for him.
I like Christopher Sanchez a lot. Maybe this is just a lazy analysis here, but he obviously, well, at least this season, reminds me of his teammate Ranger Suarez when he kind of did this second half surge.
Yeah.
And I like Christopher Sanchez a lot, though. If he can have a solidified whiff pitch, and like you said, if those pitches can really elevate and he has two of them that can really get people out, I think he's going to be very good. And if they let him pitch like they have in this start, 7 innings pitch, 10 strikeouts, he did the same thing against the Braves as well. So I think if they just give him a longer leash, they let him be a starter and they just let him do his thing while he still develops, I think Christopher Sanchez is a good sleeper for next season. But once again, with a grain of salt, we said the same thing about Ranger Suarez, and then look what happened. So Suarez is still usable, but more in a streaming context and not in a forever roster context. But I think Christopher Sanchez can be someone that you roster, so we'll see about that. It's great to see John Means back in action. He had a dominant start in this one, his best start since he came back. And it's just nice to see him kind of getting in the swing of things. I mean, they pretty much changed that home ballpark for him. And now it's nice to see him pitching in his home ballpark, because that left field fence being so far back is going to benefit him greatly. And it'll be nice to see a full season out of Means to see what he can really do. And then for Bieber, it's so tough because his stuff still looks okay, but it's just so diminished. And I really don't know how to rank him for next season. Like, do I put him in the same elk as a Justin Verlander? Do I believe that he'll turn things around? I don't know where he's going team-wise. So Bieber's a big question mark for me. Do you have him as a top 50 pitcher for next season, John?
I mean, if I'm being honest, no.
I don't think so either.
part of the big thing behind Bieber is that fastball velocity.
Right, yeah.
If just a couple years ago, I think he was hitting... he's never been like a flamethrower, right? Let's get that out of the way, right? He's not a guy who was throwing 97, 98.
No.
That's not who Bieber was. But when he was successful, that pitch was 94, you know, high 93s, things like that. And in the last two seasons, it's at 91, right? And yeah. So when you lose that velocity, as much as, you know, some guys, Jack Flaherty, don't want to harp too much on lower velocity, it does, if you don't have anything else behind that pitch, it just makes it a lot easier for guys to take it for a little bit of a ride. And that's really been the case for Bieber. I mean, the swinging strike rate on that pitch is in the first percentile. So it's basically one of the worst pitches in terms of swinging strike rate. It is one of the best pitches in terms of called strike rate, so that's great. So it ends up being really good. I mean, it's a fastball, right? You don't need to get that many whiffs with it. But just to see that, like, hey, if you can't generate whiffs with your pitches, then you're relying more on the mercy of your location. And if your location's off on a couple games, then you're just going to get rocked.
Yeah, and if you just look at even a recent example, too, of, like, Christian Javier, who struggled this season, he was throwing 94-95 on his fastball, and this season it's been, like, 91-92. So just losing a little bit of velocity like that, especially for a two-pitch pitcher like Javier, but for pitchers like Bieber and Verlander, when you lose that just extra tick of velocity, I mean, even Verlander this season, when he had lower velocity, he was getting crushed. Mm-hmm. So it's tough when you have to rely on that fastball not being something that blows by people where it's 96, but being 93 instead of 91. It makes a huge difference. So yep. Bieber is going to be tough to rank next season. I don't know if he's top 50. I don't know if he's top 100. I think he would be somewhere in that 70 to 80 range for me because I probably believe in him more than those names down there. But top 50, I don't think so. And it really depends on where he goes as well. So we'll see about that. Moving on to Monday, September 25th, from the Daily Hitting Recap article by Andrew Abramo, we have two catchers to talk about. Monday was a short slate to begin with, so not many big performances, but these two catchers performed really well. We start with Mitch Garver of the Rangers, who went 3-for-3 with a homer, a run, an RBI, and a walk. Garver has had a phenomenal and mostly healthy season with the Rangers. This will be his best season since 2019 with the Twins, as he currently has an 891 OPS in 85 games played. For his career, a little fun fact here, he has more home runs per plate appearances than Will Smith of the Dodgers. The only problem is that Garver has played only 100 games only once in his career, and it was like 102, so he's barely gotten to 100 games in his career. It's sad to see, but when Garver's healthy, he's one of the best hitting catcher options. And going into next season, I'm probably going to rank him as a top 10 catcher because if he's in the middle of that lineup and if he's healthy, he can put up a 30-homer season with a lot of RBIs. So Mitch Garver's definitely someone to look out for. And then Austin Wells of the Yankees, who went 2-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Wells seems to be solidifying himself as the starting catcher for the Yankees. He homered in 2 straight games, one on Monday and one on Tuesday. Since being called up on September 1st, he's had 6 extra base hits with 4 doubles, 2 home runs, and 7 RBI. Wells was the top catching prospect in the Yankee system. I believe he was 7th or 8th overall in their system on MLB Pipeline, and he might see a lot of playing time next season. I'm not sure where I would rank him because I'm not really sure of what his upside is. He's swung the bat pretty well so far, but I really don't know what that ceiling looks like. I'll probably put him in the top 20 for those two catcher leagues. I would definitely want a share of him, but it's hard to tell with him because he's so young, but he was pretty good in the minors, so maybe we'll see the next big catcher emerge in New York besides Francisco Alvarez.
Yeah, Garver has been on a freaking roll. Yeah, it's actually really impressive just how much he's done this season. And frankly, it's because he's healthy, which is kind of a hilarious thing. Like he's always had the bat skills, but he just couldn't stay, healthy. That was his biggest issue. So, the Rangers have an embarrassment of riches at the catcher position with Jonah Heim as well. So they kind of have a situation where they have two really good hitting catchers and they can alternate them and have them play DH as well. So it really helps the health if you don't have to be catching, let's just say 100 games. If you're only catching, 80 to 90, or maybe in Garver's situation, he's maybe only catching 70 games because he's not as good defensively as Heim. That's going to really allow him to just play more games in general. So, just a great season from Garver. And then, Wells, the biggest issue with Yankees catchers for the longest time was that they didn't hit or they struck out a lot, like Gary Sanchez, right? So if Wells can kind of demonstrate that he's got that hitting tool, Then the Yankees don't care really how good his defense is. He's going to be on the opening day roster.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the key for the Rangers is to DH Mitch Garver as much as possible. Let Heim take the bulk behind the plate, give Garver some days, but to keep him healthy, just keep him as the DH and hopefully he will be okay. Moving on to pitchers from Monday from the SP Roundup article, Verland Before Time, which is such a good title, by Nick Pollock. We start with the title boy himself, Justin Verlander of the Astros, who went 8 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts against the Mariners. A little blast from the past when the Astros needed it most. Verlander had his best start since being traded to the team. There's a lot of question marks with Verlander, of course, going into next season, being that he's 40 years old. But he should be a good middle round option to grab in your drafts next season. John, would you rather, I know it's very early and we haven't done a lot of analysis, but would you rather Verlander or Scooble next season?
Oh man, that's tough.
Yeah. Yep.
Gosh. It's so hard to say because the thing is, I think Verlander's ceiling is clearly higher than Scooble. But ooh. I think Scooble is much more reliable over a season. So I think I'd go with Scooble in this case.
I actually think Scooble has higher upside than Verlander at this point in his career, obviously. Like, we sure. saw last year Verlander won the Cy Young. So yeah. his upside mm-hmm. is very high, of course. But as he gets older, the injury risk is a little bit more apparent. We saw him get injured this season. He came back. He looked really old and rusty. Then he settled down, and he's been good as of late. Mm-hmm. Can I trust that the whole season? I don't know. Scooble, though, same thing. Can I trust it the whole season? I don't know. But the upside that we've seen from Scooble since he's come back has been so good that I think I'd rather him by just a smidge. Like, I think I'd draft Scooble over Verlander, which kind of leads me into, would you rather Verlander or Cole Reagans?
Well, this one's easy. Cole Reagans.
Oh, okay. Right off the rip. Okay.
I mean, here's the thing, right? I love drinking the Kool-Aid on Cole Reagans, right? But the reality is he's actually done well this season, even when challenged, right? He yep. had that, what, 3-game stretch where it was like Toronto, Texas, Houston. And he survived it. Like, he didn't have, like, a huge blow-up. It wasn't, you know, his best outings, for sure.
Right.
But the guy has legitimate stuff. And for once, somehow, Kansas City has produced a decent pitcher. And by produce, I actually really mean produce because he was doing nothing with Texas.
Yep.
And he got traded, and somehow Kansas City figured out something with his pitches. He became really, really something in Kansas City, which is surprising because their pitching development is garbage. And yeah, I think Reagan's for sure. I will clarify one thing. If you're in a wins league, Verlander maybe has a little bit of an edge there because Kansas City is just not going to get any wins this next season. But other than that, I mean, I don't think you should choose a pitcher just because he's going to have more wins than another guy. And I just think Reagan's upside is just so much higher than Verlander right now.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I would also take Reagan's over Verlander. And sure, like you said, Reagan's was put to the test of those tough matchups, and he did really well in all of them. He had a little bit of a hiccup in one. And even in his last start, he went like 6 clean innings. And then when he got out for the 7th, he ran into trouble, and they should have just pulled him because he literally gave up 1 run, I think, in 6 innings, and then basically gave up a single, a walk, and then came out of the game, and all 3 of those runs came in. So he had 4 earned runs on his line. But in terms of what he did when he was pitching, he dominated them. He pitched so well. So I've loved what I've seen from Cole Reagans. And obviously we're all really high on him, and we don't know what a full season would look like from him and if he could stay healthy and whatnot, but it's been really good. And like you said, Kansas City really did develop him because when he got there, he said, I really want to work on my slider. And they said, yep, that's what we were going to tell you. And they worked on it, and he's been so good. And then for Verlander in general, to finish up that, I was going to say Verlander or Bieber, but we kind of already know that since we both don't even consider Bieber as a top 50 pitcher. So obviously it's Verlander there.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Verlander has the potential to be a top 30 pitcher next year. That's like
yes,
not
absolutely.
Out of the question. Like yep. he's such a wily vet. Like even with a lower velocity on his fastball, he's going to figure something out with his secondaries. Plus, if you think about just context, like he's back in Houston. He doesn't have to worry about like moving his family anywhere.
Yep.
You know, they're back where they feel comfortable. And I think that's a big thing for any professional sports athlete, to just have some consistency in your life. So I think that's just going to, he still has the potential to be a really solid add in your drafts. It's just, I think, yeah, you and I are probably a little bit higher on Scoobal and Riggins and being more consistent top 30 guys than Verlander next season.
Yep, I completely agree on that. And then closing out for Monday, we had a little bit of a pitcher's duel between Logan Webb of the Giants and Blake Snell of the Padres. Logan Webb went 9 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 9 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Padres. And then Blake Snell of the Padres went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Giants. And Blake Snell just capped off his Cy Young season with a dominant performance here. 21 whiffs, 39% CSW for a golden goal. He's just been unbelievable and easily has that Cy Young locked up. And then Logan Webb, he only threw 21% fastballs and 22% sliders in this one, while he threw 63 changeups to the Padres lineup. He's had an incredible season, actually, and seems to be in a bit of a Spider-Man meme with Chris Bassett. Who would you rather between Logan Webb and Chris Bassett? And it's tough because their numbers are eerily similar.
Yeah. I mean, I'll talk about Chris Bassett a little bit later in this podcast. I think I probably go with Logan Webb. I think the upside's just a little bit higher there. He started out the season like not very pretty. Frankly, last season also wasn't very pretty for Logan Webb, but he's figured something out. He's become a better pitcher. He's learning how to get strikeouts better. He's still, I mean, he's probably, I think he's 5-6 years younger than Bassett as well. And so I think I put Logan Webb above Bassett. But it's close. Like you said, their numbers are very similar. I just think Logan Webb has more strikeout potential in his game. That being said, Bassett did just get 10 strikeouts in his last starts, or 12 strikeouts in his last starts. So who am I to say?
Yeah, it's a really tough call. I think I go Logan Webb by a hair, but Chris Bassett was really good this season. Logan Webb has been really good for the past 3 seasons, and Chris Bassett's been really good for the past 3 as well. So I don't know. They are like the same pitcher. So I think once Logan Webb goes off the board, Chris Bassett should go right after him or vice versa. Sure. So I like both of them. I think they're really good rotation stabilizers. They're not going to give you flashy strikeout numbers, and they're not going to kill you with your peripherals. So I really like both of these guys as your SP3. Like, if you can get one of these guys as your SP3, I feel great about my rotation, because hopefully those first two guys are someone like Luis Castillo and Cole Reagans that can really carry you strikeout-wise.
I will say one big thing about Logan Webb, too, this year. 63% ground ball rate. 2 years ago when he had his breakout season, 63% ground ball rate as well. So
wow.
A big part about his game... And, you know, I think last season was like, oh, can he repeat that? And he got to 59%. So he kind of repeated it. But when he gets ground balls, man, like, he's so good. And granted, that's also based on the defense behind him a little bit to convert all those ground ball opportunities into outs. And he's kind of – he hasn't been, you know, as amazing as that 2021 season. But that's a big part of his game, and it came back this year. So if he can get that back next year, if we're – seeing like a 60% ground ball rate from Logan Webb, that's basically shades of like a really, really good season for him.
Yeah, I agree. And that's great analysis there with the ground ball rate, because that's something he needs to be successful, right? Like, that's one of the key elements in his game, that if he can repeat that and if he can improve that, then he's going to be dominant. So yeah, him and Chris Bassett, both very good pitchers that are just very stable. But we are going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we'll go over Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from this past week, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to get into the rest of the weekly performance recap. John, who performed well on Tuesday?
Yeah, we're going to start with the hitting recaps, of course. Thanks to Mark Stuminger for the write-up here. Christian Walker, we already mentioned him earlier in this pod, and frankly, we've been talking a lot about him this season. He had a great game, 3-for-5 with a triple, 2 home runs, 3 runs, and 6 RBI. Basically, after trailing 4-0, the Diamondbacks were just like, no, we still want to compete in this game, and put up 15 unanswered runs on the White Sox. Walker collected 11 total bases, drove in 6 runs. Again, we've been saying it all season. He's one of the game's best first basemen. I don't think he's necessarily like a first and second round talent, but if he's not gone by the end of the third, I don't know what's going on in your drafts. This is his second straight season with 30 plus home runs, 90 plus RBI, 80 plus runs, and 120 plus WRC plus, and he has 11 stolen bases. Like, this guy is like Freddie Freeman light, essentially, and he's not even that light. So it's just impressive what he's been doing this season. And yeah, I'm not going to necessarily target him in drafts next year. He still might be going a little too early for my comfort, or I might be grabbing someone like Freddie Freeman in the first or second round. But my goodness, Christian Walker is a monster in fantasy, and I don't think it's going to be slowing down anytime soon. Then we're going to talk about Ellie De La Cruz, another young Cincinnati Red, 3-for-5 with 2 homers, 3 runs, and 4 RBI in his game. This was actually his first multi-homer game of his young career, which is kind of actually shocking. The first one, he was facing the Guardians. His first one is off Giolito, 108 miles an hour. And then his second one was 119 miles an hour. He was just like, yeah, I could do better. So yeah, he just absolutely destroying the ball. I'm really curious to see where he goes in drafts next year, right? With the initial hype around him, he still ended up with not a great line. In 95 games, 235, 301, 401 slash line. That's not really good. That 301 OBP, of course, is not helped by the fact that he strikes out 34% of the time. Just not a great number. What is enticing, though, of course, is that those 13 home runs and 33 stolen bases in 95 games, right? That's kind of like a 20-40 season if you extrapolate it out to a full season. That's really good for a guy who's still super young. I just don't know where I would put him in drafts next year. Where do you think you have him?
So I'm going to reference a mock draft, a way too early mock draft for 2024 that was done with a lot of big industry people like Scott Pianowski of Yahoo, Michael Govier, Greg Jewett, Frank Stamfel, just a lot of great people in the industry. And Ellie De La Cruz went 25th overall. He went in the second round of, I believe, a 15-team league. So third round of a 10-teamer, somewhere around there. I can see it just on upside alone, because we saw Corbin Carroll going in the third or fourth rounds of 15-team leagues. I really think that third round is probably the last chance you can grab Ellie, because O'Neill Cruz was going in like the fifth round this season, and he's got similar potential to him, but Ellie's stolen bases, I think, are way more than O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah.
So I think people are going to take the gamble on Ellie in the third round at the latest. Like, I think that's when he's going to go, because if you're going to tell me a baseline of 15 homers, 30 stolen bases, and he has third base and shortstop eligibility, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like judging, you know, with that third base shortstop range. Is this a guy that you're taking? I mean, Nolan Arenado was going in the third round this year, right? That's kind of where he was scheduled to go. We already mentioned Gunnar Henderson was going in the sixth round last year, and he didn't play. He played like, what, 30 games, I think, in the season before. So I think it makes sense for him to go third round. I just think for a guy who, again, he has all the talent, so I don't want to harp on that too much in the fact that he has really poor stats. 20-40 guy for sure, still probably deserves to go top five rounds. I don't know if I have him in the third. I probably have him more in the fourth or the fifth, and I mean, that's just you know, nitpicking at this point. But it really does worry me about that strikeout rate. You know, we thought it was going to go down when he moved from the minors to the majors. I don't know why we thought that, but you know, that was kind of the assumption, right? Like, oh, he's going to get better with the game, and he's going to be a bit more patient at the plate. He is kind of patient. His walk rate's like average. You know, it's not terrible, but he just strikes out so much. Like, that average is abysmal, and it's hard to like spend that much draft capital on a guy who frankly didn't get that many counting stats other than stolen bases. So I'm probably with you. I probably still take him in the third, fourth round, but it will be one of those kind of like, oh, I don't know if I really want to do this. I have to really believe in this guy to go away from feeling good about that draft pick.
Yeah, it's a huge risk. Don't get it twisted. Like, it's a huge risk. There's a lot of holes in his game, and if we see the steps to improve as we expect him to do next season, then obviously the sky's the limit, right? Like, that's what you're wanting from him. But I think based on your team context, I think if you start your draft with, let's say you're at the back end of the first round for drafting, and you go Freddie Freeman followed by Juan Soto, I will absolutely take Ellie De La Cruz in the third round, because obviously those are two guys with good batting average, good source of power. I can take the hit of the strikeouts or lower batting average from Ellie and then just get all the steals. So
sure.
I think it really depends on your team context of if you're going to draft him in the third round. But I think that's where he's going to go. And I think that's where he should go just because of that upside alone. Like I said, if he clicks and the strikeout rate gets better and he's batting, let's say, even just 260 instead of 235, right, for a whole season, he's probably hitting 20 to 25 homers and stealing 40 to 45 bases. And you have to take that at third base. I mean, you really can't get much better than that. So I think that's where Ellie goes. And then one final note on Christian Walker. Yeah, I just think that he is so good that he's kind of taken over. You said Freddie Freeman light. I think he's just taken over Paul Goldschmidt, right? Like, this is a Paul Goldschmidt line that he just did this season. And I don't see it slowing down because the Diamondbacks are a good team. I think that Christian Walker, he's not young, but he's not old. I just think this is Paul Goldschmidt. So in my opinion, the only first baseman that I put ahead of him is Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, Pete Alonso, and I think the list ends there. I think I'd rather Christian Walker than Vlad Jr., but that's a debate for another day.
That's a, I'm not saying that's a bold take because Vlad has been pretty garbage this season, but to not expect a bounce back from Vlad, I think is kind of huge. But hey, I mean, I'm with you there though. He's definitely better than Goldschmidt at this point. And I think, you know, I was just looking it up. In Pitchless top 10 first baseman of the 2023 season, Walker's third.
Okay.
Freddie Freeman's first, Matt Olson's second. Yep. So Alonso's sixth, but I think that's more because, you know, a lot of homers, but not a ton else, unfortunately, because of that Mets team context.
Right.
But I think Christian Walker is firmly at least in the fourth slot there. And then if you really want to believe that the Vlad comeback's back, then maybe he bounces back to fifth. But then that means that if you get him in like the third, fourth round, you're getting basically a top three guy, right, that late, which I think would be incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I just think Christian Walker is fantastic. I think he was very undervalued going into this year. We talked about him a lot. I've spoken about my big take on him, and it paid off. So I'm happy to see it. Hopefully he gets treated properly next season in drafts.
Moving on to then the SP roundup, the Lugo Bus article from Nick Pollock. We're going to start with Kyle Bradish of the Baltimore Orioles going up against the crosstown, well, I guess technically not crosstown rivals, but DMV rivals in the Washington Nationals. Eight innings with zero earned runs, three hits, two walks, and four strikeouts. Bradish actually earned his aces gonna ace in this start. I think well-deserved, though, because he's been so good to end the year. His four-seamer, which was a pitch that he used a lot, he moved away from it, started going a little bit more to his secondaries there. Just really good for the Orioles that he discovered this basically at the right time. And it's going to be interesting to see if he repeats this next year. Is he going to be a top 30 pitcher next year? That's an interesting question to ask of Bradish. The slider, of course, is his main secondary. It's been working really well for him. The curve is decent too. It's not as consistent though. But at the end of the day, it got him to a 2.85 ERA and a 1.05 whip on the season. I believe that's 11th and 7th respectively in how good those numbers are compared to the rest of the league. So incredible season from Kyle. And I'm very curious how he does next year, because this season he wasn't great. He was available on a lot of waiver wires, and then I picked him up in on waivers halfway through the season. I think that's what a lot of other people picked him up as well, and I just held on to him all the way through because he was just such a good pitcher. So props to him for having a great season. Obviously, there's still a lot of postseason play for the Orioles as well. And then Miles Michaelis of the St. Louis Cardinals got the win against the Brewers. Seven innings with one earned run, five hits, two walks, and five strikeouts. The best part about Michaelis' story, actually, is that he is he's thrown the third most innings this season, which is insane to think about. Like, Miles Michaelis, in my opinion, has just fallen just completely below the radar, and for good reason. His numbers aren't that great. He's just been an absolute workhorse this season. 35 starts. Well, he's going to get to 35 starts, most likely. And that would be the third time since 2010 that we've seen a starter go 35 starts. The other two were David Price and Julius Tashin. So, Yeah, great company, I guess. Maybe David Price, not really Justine, but whatever. Michaelis, ultimately, a lot of ERA problems this season. That's not too surprising, but, you know, nice in terms of the innings output. And, you know, I think at one point, the Cardinals probably just didn't care because they were so bad, so they were fine with trotting out Michaelis all the time.
Yeah, Michaelis's numbers are not great for fantasy. It's awesome that he's given us volume, and he's been a good streamer every now and then. So
yeah,
it's great to see that. But yeah, really impressive to see that he could start 35 games this season. I mean, to join the names of David Price and the legend Yuli Chacin, I mean, what an honor. I mean, what a legend. So yeah, Michaelis, not too great for fantasy perspectives, but for a real life pitcher, I mean, you kind of want him in your rotation, right? Just to give you a length in any given situation. So very cool for Michaelis. And then Kyle Bradish has had such a good season. I'm going to probably rank him as a top 50 pitcher next season. I don't know how much I believe in this season. It was fantastic, but I can see him easily being a 4.30 ERA pitcher going into next year. Like, if he ends next season with a 4.30 ERA and a 1.25 whip, I would not bat an eyelash. I would completely get it. So I think he's great. I think he'll be great. I'm going to rank him accordingly, but I'm also going to bake in a little bit of this is a one-time thing that we saw, and I got to give him a little bit more time to run.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, like, what's my draft strategy for him next season?
Okay.
Right? Like, is he – he probably goes in the first 10 rounds, right, you'd think?
Probably towards the end of that. I would say, depending on the size of your league, obviously that's a given. So when we say a certain range, take that in consideration between 10-team leagues and 15-team leagues. But right, I could see him going in, like, a 15-team league in the – 7th, 8th round, and I could see in a 10-team league him going in like the 10th to 12th round range. So that's kind of where I see him, and just kind of off a free ball off the top of my head, that's where I think he'll end up. But he could end up higher if people really truly believe in what he did.
Right. I mean, currently I think he's, what is he? He's 23rd on the list.
Okay.
Do I believe that he's a top 40 pitcher? Right. Is he in that 30 to 40 range next season? Probably, right? I think that that seems reasonable. So, yeah, that puts him in a 12-teamer at basically at the end of the 10th round, maybe 11th and 12th. Of course, you could just take advantage of upside and say, hey, this guy was 11th in ERA and 7th in WHIP, and the underlying numbers don't look that weird.
Right.
Maybe this is legit. So, yeah, maybe you get him in the 9th or the 8th then. But, very interesting questions. There's a lot of breakouts this year, right, in terms of pitching.
Yep.
You know, how do you deal with all the rookies next year in drafts? What's that going to look like, you know? Where does Bobby Miller go? Stuff. Questions like that are going to be really interesting. Looking forward to exploring that in the offseason, but I think for now, it's at least just impressive that he's been doing this well.
I agree, and I think Kyle Bradish and Justin Steele are going to go in relatively very similar ranges. I think that's the same kind of echelon of pitcher where they're probably top 30, top 40 guys, but people just don't know if they're sold on it. So we'll see. And yeah, there's a lot of question marks going into next season. We'll probably cover that on the off season episodes of where do we rank these guys? How do we see the draft going? A lot of stuff to talk about. So we'll save all of that for the off season. But moving on to Wednesday, September 27th, from the Daily Hitting Recap article by Jim Chatterton, we start with Francisco Lindor of the Mets. He went 4-for-7 with 3 home runs, 3 runs, and 6 RBI. Granted, this was a doubleheader, so he didn't hit 3 home runs in one game. Although he has done that before. He hit 2 in one and 1 in the other. Lindor has done it, though. He becomes the 4th Mets player to have a 30-30 season, and it's the first 30-30 season in his career. He's actually stolen 31 bases now after he added a steal on Thursday, and he's only been caught 3 times this year. So despite only being 71st percentile in sprint speed, Lindor is a smart and effective base stealer. He's been barreling up the ball better than ever with a 10.4% rate, which is the highest in his career, and his hard hit rate has increased closer to his 2021 numbers. In my opinion, Lindor is a top 3 shortstop for fantasy, maybe even top 2. I think Bobby Witt is number 1 easily for fantasy, and then you really have to have the debate of Corey Seager and Francisco Lindor. I mean, you could probably throw Trey Turner in there as well, but I think it's really between Lindor and Seager. And if you look at it, I mean, Lindor has had a better season than Seager. Obviously, what Seager's been doing has been great, and he's been injured. So he was at a disadvantage there. But I think because of those stolen bases, I might even rank Lindor as the second best shortstop, which is crazy because I love Corey Seager, and I think he can give you a 45 homer, 120 RBI, 330 batting average season. Mm-hmm. But with the injury history, I don't know. I think I got to lean Lindor for shortstop number two behind Bobby Witt. Moving on to Bryce Harper of the Phillies, who went 3-for-4 with two doubles, a homer, two runs, an RBI, and a stolen base. Harper seems all the way back now after recovering from the Tommy John surgery that he had to repair the partially torn UCL in his right arm. When he first returned, it seemed like his power was sapped, kind of like a Space Jam basketball situation. Rightfully so, though, he was recovering from an elbow surgery, and he just wasn't producing the same as we know Harper to do. Well, all of those worries have kind of gone away now. Since August 16th, Harper has a 205 WRC+. He's hit 14 home runs in the 168 plate appearances from that August date, which, if you were to extrapolate that, even though it's obviously a small sample size, is nearly a 60 home run season. I don't think that's realistic, but I think next season he's worthy of a second round pick or higher in hopes of a 40 to 50 home run season and 10 to 20 steals. Definitely not out of the question, and the Phillies kind of need a round of applause here because despite losing Harper for a month or two, Rhys Hoskins for the whole season, Trey Turner stinking for 3 months, they've made the playoffs, so really impressive. And Aaron Nola stunk, so I don't know how they did it, but kudos to the Phillies because they found a way to make the postseason despite all of that adversity. Next, we have Josh Lowe of the Rays. He went 3-for-3 with a homer, 3 runs, an RBI, and a walk. The home run that he hit in this game pushed him over the edge for a 20-30 season. Really impressive for someone that was platooned nearly all season long and only has 133 games played. He's just had an incredible breakout season, so nice little 20-30 for Josh Lowe. And then lastly, Aaron Judge of the Yankees. He went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 3 runs, 4 RBI, and 2 walks. He's on a 58 home run pace if he had the same number of plate appearances as last year. He's got 37 homers and only 445 plate appearances this season. He actually has a higher hard hit rate and higher barrel rate than his record-setting 2022 season. So you have to think what this season would have been if Dodger Stadium didn't have a cement block in the outfield wall. So just unbelievable. I think Aaron Judge is still a guy who deserves to be drafted in the top 5 to 6 picks in the first round. He is just so good when healthy. And this one wasn't even his fault. I mean, there shouldn't be cement in the outfield wall. So Aaron Judge, unbelievable. Could have had a better season than last year, which is just crazy to think of. But what a season for all of these players, really.
I mean, there shouldn't be bricks in the outfield wall either. But apparently because of tradition, that's got to be the case, right?
Gotta love the tradition.
I was before we talk about the baseball, I was going to mention, did you see the story about Bryce Harper when he got ejected?
Oh, my God, yes. Angel Hernandez is just horrible. How does this guy still have a job? How has he not got, like, excommunicated from the union? It makes no sense.
Yeah, the best part about that story, though, was, like, because he threw his helmet into the stands, right?
And, right.
Like, some kid picked it up and, like, he was just like, oh, this is the best game I've ever been to. Like, I love Bryce Harper. I just thought that was just hilarious how, like, people are like, oh, you know, you gotta set a good example for the kids. But hey, when it's Angel Hernandez calling, like, really bad pitches, yeah, it makes sense.
It's really bad. And yeah, that interview with that kid after he got the helmet is hilarious. That kid is really, really funny. And then after the game as well, Bryce Harper met the kid and signed the helmet for him with a bunch of stuff. So really, really cool stuff there. I think, real quick, ranking these, okay, these four, what do you think is the best souvenir to get at a baseball game if the random situation happens? So we have baseball bat, baseball, batting gloves, or helmet. How do you rank those four?
Oh,
because I have my clear ranking. I thought about this a lot since I saw that helmet get thrown in the crowd.
Are you saying, like, it just randomly, like, enters the, like, into the stands?
Like, let's say a player throws you something specifically. Batting gloves, helmet, or ball. What would you rather?
So I think I go bat.
Okay.
Helmet.
Okay.
Ball, and then gloves.
Okay, so I have the exact same list, but swap gloves and ball, because obviously someone could get a foul ball or something, or someone could throw you a ball in practice.
True.
Batting gloves are so unique to the player, so I like that. But easily, if I got a bat or a helmet, I would be ecstatic, dude. That is such a great souvenir. Like, oh my God.
I just don't want someone's gloves because those things are disgusting.
That's true. That's true. I would have them sign it and then just keep them in a case and never touch them at all.
Yeah, pretty much. Or wash them and then have him sign it.
The helmet's just as bad, though. It's on his head where he's sweating. I mean, that's pretty bad. True. But that's very true. Cool. Very cool.
But you can clean a helmet and not feel bad about it. Like,
true.
Gloves,
you're
like,
right.
You know, that maybe that's a little harder. But going back to the baseball, I was going to ask you while you were talking about Lindor, like, where do you have him? And it's like, oh, you have him two.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Very interesting. I will say, I think he's had such an under-the-radar 30-30 season.
He
right?
has.
Like, legitimately, I think, I mean, the Lindor hype died the first year he went to the Mets, right? Because he was so awful that
yep.
season. Last year, he was actually pretty decent.
Yep.
But then this year, he's like, oh, yeah, I can actually do a 30-30 season. The only problem is his team is terrible, so no one was really catching on to it. He's, you know, just a really solid mainstay. I still think, even with the added bonus of the speed, I still like Seager maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
Just because he offers more in the other four categories that Lindor maybe can't offer as much. But I'm kind of with you that he's the top three shortstop. I mean, it's because who did you have number one again?
Bobby Witt, easily.
Bobby Witt, right? Yeah. So it really becomes a question of, do you believe that Tatis is going to be breaking the top three?
Right. True.
And that's such a hard question to ask because it's like Tatis is... you know, kind of consensus. Well, maybe not consensus. Before, he was a consensus number one, first round draft pick, right? Is he a first round draft pick next year? He might be late first round, early second. And then the question is, okay, then do you take Lindor in the same range as Tatis? And I think we have it ingrained in our heads that Tatis has better upside than Lindor.
Yes, right.
But the fact is, Lindor just got a 30-30 season, and even though, yeah, I mean, granted, Tatis did miss, you know, like a whole month of games because of his, well, let's just call it stupidity. He still had a 25-29 season, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you like that upside better from a guy who's only 24? Or do you want Lindor who had the 30-30 season already?
Yeah, that's a great debate. And that's something I really want to dig into in the off-season episodes because I think this is such a good debate. Like, Bobby Witt to me is easily number one. Like, there's no one taking his position because, 30 home runs, 50 steals. You can't beat that. You can't top that. And he has third base eligibility too. So, I mean, geez, this guy's incredible. But for that second spot, I mean, there really is a clump of three guys, I'll say, where it's Lindor, Tatis, and Trey Turner. Because Trey Turner almost had a 30-30 season too, and he stunk for 3 months. So,
yeah.
Those three guys are kind of interchangeable on who you believe and who you like better lineup-wise, because all three of those teams will have good lineups next season, most likely. The Padres, the Phillies, and the Mets. It's just who you would rather for a, I guess, repeat of their season. Tatis, since the PED suspension, I don't know what his power looks like. If it's 25 homers, I think I like him least of those two names.
Well, and I kind of forgot. Tatis won't have shortstop eligibility next year.
Oh, so right. He'll only have outfield.
He'll only have outfield.
I forgot, too.
That tumbles him down. I forgot about that, too. I forgot that Ha-Seong Kim was basically...
You're right.
So, I mean, technically, he's not in this conversation because he does play shortstop, but...
That makes
said,
it a lot easier.
Yeah, but if you're looking at guys who have, like, you know, similar stat makeups, right, then you could maybe have that conversation of, all right, like, Tatis and Lindor can both offer similar stats. Outfield isn't really great in terms of depth as well. It's a different conversation for sure, but yeah, I think knowing that information, Lindor is a top three shortstop for me.
What's really funny too is as I was saying the names and I was thinking about this as we did the write-up and whatnot, I was thinking about like the top five shortstops and I didn't include Tatis. And then when you said that, I was like, oh my God, I forgot Tatis. And then rightfully so, he just has outfield eligibility. So kind of
he had shortstop this year. So that's why we thought about him in that context.
Right. So yeah, that makes it a lot easier knowing that Tatis won't have shortstop eligibility because then it gets really complicated. But if you're giving me between Lindor and Trey Turner, I think Trey Turner is going to have a great season next year. I think he's going to be undervalued in drafts as well.
Oh, completely.
But I think I go with Lindor. I think I take Lindor. And the Corey Seager versus Lindor debate is perfectly fair. I think that if you took Seager over Lindor, I wouldn't bat an eyelash. I'd be like, yep, I understand. I get it. But for the steals alone, I think you kind of want to hammer someone that's going to get 30 steals in those early rounds, because even though they're more frequent, getting that solidified is a good thing. And Seager gives you literally zero speed. So I think it's one of those situations where, hey, if I take Freddie Freeman in the first, I'm taking Lindor in the second and not Seager. And if I take Acuna in the first, I'm going to take Seager and not Lindor. You know, like, if your team comp allows it, I think that's what will really dictate where you take Lindor or Seager.
Yeah, and maybe just to add a little bit more commentary, Trey Turner is going to be a really good fourth-round pick this upcoming year.
Oh, my God. If he falls to the fourth, I'm taking him everywhere. Everywhere.
I just think everyone's going to be sleeping on him because he's like, well, he was garbage. And then you look at his stats, 26 homers, 102 runs, 30 stolen bases. Bad average, 266. It's the second lowest of his career.
Right.
But you think one more year in Philly, he's going to have it figured out. I mean, if I'm being honest, he probably goes at the end of the second to me. Like, that's probably where he ends up getting picked. But, like, if he just repeats the production from 2 years ago when he was with the Dodgers, that's number one talent right there. So
yeah, in that mock draft I referenced earlier, Trey Turner went 17th overall, Corey Seager went 16th overall, and Francisco Lindor went 32nd overall, which if that's how it's going, give me all the Lindor shares. You know, like,
yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah, I mean, obviously ADP is one of those things that is very much like it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak, right?
Right.
A lot of people will just look at ADP and like, okay, well, Lindor's going 30, so why would I ever pick him 15? And that's your opportunity to leap in a little bit and grab him a little bit earlier. So I guess knowing the information, maybe I was a bit aggressive in saying, you know, Turner's going to last to the fourth round. But I do think there's some and, you know, obviously we're guys who are steeped in fantasy baseball every single day.
Right.
For your regular leagues, there might be just people who just remembered, yeah, Trey Turner was garbage last year. Why am I picking up in the second round?
Right.
And he falls a little bit further.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. But moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, from the SP Roundup article, Shred Sheehan by Nick Pollock. We start with the title boy himself, Emmett Sheehan of the Dodgers, who went 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts against the Rockies at Coors Field. It was great to see Sheehan dominate the Rockies in Coors while also registering 20 whiffs. His slider looked great and the breaker went 8 for 25 on whiffs. Nick doesn't believe that Sheehan's 95 mile per hour heater is a whiff offering and that he's overperforming a bit in general, so maybe we should temper our expectations for 2024. However, my expectations weren't all that high for him in the first place, and if he has a permanent spot in that Dodgers rotation going into next season, he might find his way onto some of my teams off of pure upside alone and belief in the Dodgers. Next, we have Gerrit Cole of the Yankees, who went 9 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Blue Jays. What an exclamation mark on the season for Cole in this one, solidifying his first ever Cy Young Award. Cole has been otherworldly this season with a 2.63 ERA, a 0.98 whip, and 222 strikeouts in 209 innings pitched. As we mentioned last podcast, Cole isn't striking out as many guys as he once was, like the 276 strikeouts in 2018, 326 in 2019, or 257 in 2022, but he's keeping runners off base and keeping runs off the board. He will easily be my SP1 going into next season for sure, edging out Spencer Strider, so Gerrit Cole, unbelievable season. And then just two good performances I wanted to mention. Tyler Glasnow of the Rays went 5 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 9 Ks against the Red Sox. And Tarik Skubal of the Tigers, who we formerly mentioned, he went 4 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Royals. Skubal only went 4 innings in this one because the start was cut short due to the game being suspended. So no worries there, but Skubal's been amazing, Glasnow's been amazing. Both guys should be top 20 pitchers for next season.
Yeah, it still kind of blows my mind that Gerrit Cole hasn't won a Cy Young yet.
Yep. Insane.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to root for my dudes, obviously, Pablo and Sonny, but Gerrit Cole deserves it completely this season. He's been so dominant. It's just without a question. All right, moving on to hitters. Thanks to Seth Klusmeyer, who wrote the hitting recap article here. The two guys I'm talking about aren't super fantasy relevant, but I figured it'd be nice to talk about them because they had some notable games on Thursday. Miguel Cabrera of the Detroit Tigers, 2 for 3 with a homer, 2 runs, 2 RBIs, and a walk. It feels a little bit appropriate in our final regular season podcast in 2023 to talk about basically one of the most legendary players in the game in his final week of his baseball playing career, at least. Miggy has not been fantasy relevant in 12 teamers probably since 2016, which I think is kind of insane to think about. But seriously, go look at the stats. It has not been pretty for like the last 7 years. This season, he hasn't been good either. I mean, there's no way that you had him on a fantasy team, even if you're in like a deep 15 team AL only league, right? Like maybe if you're like one of those crazy like 30 teamers, maybe yeah. Miggy gets picked up. But even then, like he was just not fantasy relevant at all. That being said, though, props for being one of the best hitters in the game. He got to 500 plus homers and 3,000 hits this season. Absolutely insane career, triple crown winner. Honestly, one of the best to ever do it. And yeah, congratulations to him. I hope he feels like his career is a successful one, at least better than a $90 bottle of wine. Yeah, honestly, just hats off to Miggy. I mean, he terrorized my Twins for many years. I'm kind of glad to see him out of the division because he also managed to hit one of his home runs this season against the Twins, like ironically, just as a nice parting gift. So, yeah, glad to see Miggy gone, but props to hats off to him for just, capping off such an incredible career. And then J.P. Crawford of the Seattle Mariners, 2-for-5 with a double, 2 RBI. Doesn't sound like a great line, but honestly, it was a great line for the Mariners because he single-handedly saved the Mariners' playoff chances. They're currently one game out of the third wild card spot, and so basically they kind of need to win every single game, and yesterday they started a 4-game series with Texas, so it is not going to be easy for them. That being said, in this one, I was following this one like a hawk, actually. I wasn't watching it, but I was just following the score. Bottom of the ninth, Aroldis Chapman, always the reliable closer, right, wink wink, loaded the bases. The Mariners got to two outs without scoring a single run, bases loaded again. And Crawford came in to play hero, sliced the ball over Evan Carter's head, win the game. And yeah, allowed the Mariners to go from basically feeling like it was they're about to crash out of the playoffs to having a shot to make the playoffs this year. Again, they're only one game behind of Houston. But yeah, their next three games are against the still against the Rangers. So it's going to be a tough task for them. Crawford, fantasy-wise, he's been okay. He's really helpful in the ratios department. He's got the 15th highest OBP, so especially if you're in OBP leagues, he was pretty solid there thanks to his 15% walk rate. He's hit career highs in homers, runs, and RBI, but then that sounds great until you look at those numbers and you realize, oh, that those are pretty low. Those aren't that great. But that being said, you know, in some deep leagues, I'm sure he services pretty well as a middle infielder guy. And he's actually still young. I think he's only 28. So he is improving. So maybe next season, it feels weird to call it a breakout season because he's, you know, that old. But he has been steadily improving year after year. And maybe next year's a season where he could maybe get to like 20 homers and, 980 to 90 RBI or runs and actually become a little bit more fantasy relevant than he is right now.
Yeah, so first of all, congratulations to Miguel Cabrera. Unbelievable career. It was a pleasure watching him play baseball. I mean, 500 plus homers, 3,000 plus hits. Just an overall great personality and dude that succeeded in baseball. And really awesome end to his career. So shout out to you, Miggy. It was awesome seeing you play the sport of baseball. And then J.P. Crawford was really solid in the final 2 months of the season for fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I like him as someone that is a good middle round option if you need a shortstop or a middle infielder, because if he's batting leadoff in front of Julio Rodriguez, he's always going to have value. It's kind of like whoever bats leadoff for the Angels when Trout and Otani are there will have value. Like when Taylor Ward was leading off for the Angels, everyone's like, yep, give me all of him, because you just want those guys in good situations. So J.P. Crawford exploded this season, and I think that he's got more in the tank. He's younger, and I think that the Mariners are a team that is going to compete every single season from here on out. So I really like J.P. Crawford as a middle infield option or a very late round shortstop option.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe was knocking his counting stats a little too much, right? He does have 92 runs this season, which is incredible. That's good for 28th overall among all batters. You don't love the fact that he only has 18 homers, but that's still decent for, you know, that kind of shortstop that you're talking about where, you know, end of drafts, right?
Yeah.
It's just that the RBIs are a little bit low. He doesn't offer any speed whatsoever, but the averages are good too. You know, His OBP is good, but it's because his average is good as well. So he is definitely serviceable. He's not going to be, you know, in the conversation that we just had about Lindor, Bobby Witt, and Corey Seager, but he's not going to be an absolute nothing burger for your team.
Yeah. I mean, for Crawford, if you're going to tell me next season, in a full year, he gets 100 runs scored, bats 280 or higher, has 20 home runs, 5 to 8 to 10 steals, somewhere around there, and like 50, 60 RBI, that's a great middle infielder. That's a great shortstop. I mean, yeah. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. And technically, he hasn't hit that yet, but he's on the trajectory too. So,
yeah. Right,
definitely,
exactly.
Definitely one of those guys who is worth keeping an eye on. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick Pollitt for the Gilbert and Discerning article, SP Roundup article. We're going to start with a guy who we mentioned earlier, Chris Bassitt, first year in Toronto. Just lightened the scoreboard up. 7.2 innings, no earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 12 strikeouts. Yeah, Bassitt is, really good this season. That was 21 whiffs and a 41% CSW, so just insane numbers from him. On the newsletter today, which I write on Fridays, he had this disgusting sweeper against Aaron Judge in that game. He was just pounding the zone really well, just getting guys to whiff. Incredible. So that's obviously not like the Bassitt we expect day in and day out, but he has really improved a lot this season. Which is weird to say. He's one of those guys where I think Nick likes to joke he's matchup agnostic. It doesn't matter who he plays. He plays exactly the same. So he doesn't actually dominate guys like, you know, the poor teams like the Nationals or the Royals. But then he does dominate teams like Houston, like the Rangers, like the Yankees. So, yeah, just incredible. Velocity's up as well, which is pretty solid. And, of course, the joke with Bassitt, I think, this upcoming offseason is going to be, well, if you remove his first start that had 9 earned runs, he'd be really, really solid. So just thought I'd get ahead of the competition here. 3.25 ERA with a 1.14 whip if you take out that 9 earned run game. So, yeah, that's really solid numbers. That's, like, top 40 production. And that's really who Chris Bassitt is. He's, like, perennially, like, a top 40 pitcher. He's never going to be like a top 20 guy unless like a bunch of people are injured ahead of him, but he's not going to like sink you and be like a top 60, you know, in that 50 to 60 range of a pitcher as well. So, Bassie, gotta love what he's doing this season. And then finishing off with a guy that you and I have loved for a long time, Jesus Luzardo of Miami. Really decent season this year too. 7.1 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts up against your Mets. So I'm sure you didn't really love this start too much, but 22 whiffs, incredible day for Luzardo, really showing the stuff there. You know, he did allow a run in the 8th inning, and that, you know, brought up the numbers just a tiny bit. But 44% sliders with 18 whiffs. So basically, out of the 22, he earned 18 of those on his sliders, which is insane. When it's located really well, he's super solid. It's just that consistency, right? That's always been the issue with Luzardo is consistency. And when he shows it, he is amazing. Since May 9th, which isn't that arbitrary of a date, but it might sound arbitrary, 3.61 ERA with a 1.169 whip. So, the good thing is that whip is, you know, down a little bit. The big thing, of course, is that ERA, right? Not pretty. You don't love it. It's really a product of the fact that he has not a great walk rate. It's like average, but for a guy like Luzardo, you want it to be elite. If he brings that walk rate down, that ERA will basically go down as well because now he's not letting base runners on. They're not like getting in with more hits and things like that. And it makes him more of a elite pitcher. And that's kind of those small nitpicky things you got to talk about when you're talking about like a top 30 guy.
Yeah, I really like what Luzardo has done this season. Obviously, the numbers are a little inflated and you'd like to see him come down a bit because he has that upside. But I think it was just a really strong showing from Luzardo that makes me more confident in drafting him next season. So I do like Luzardo a lot. I'm a big fan of him. And then just to end things with Chris Bassitt, yeah, pretty insane. So like you said, if you take out that 9 earned run start, he has a 3.25 ERA and a 1.14 whip. He also has 21 quality starts and 186 strikeouts in 200 innings, right? Logan Webb, just for reference, so remove that 9 earned run start from Bassitt, and Logan Webb has a 3.25 ERA, the exact same ERA, a 1.07 whip, so a little bit better, 24 quality starts, a little bit better, and then 194 strikeouts in 216 innings pitched. So Bassett has a better strikeout rate, a little less quality starts, but they're like the same pitcher. So pretty insane to think that those two guys are the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah, it is kind of nuts. And then, yeah, like you said, now we have to think about who do you pick up in drafts. And maybe it's like, you want to take the upside guy? Maybe you take the upside guy. But you want to take a guy who's maybe like two rounds later, even though, like you said, hey, if one guy goes, you pick up the next guy immediately, right? That's kind of how maybe like we might feel about picking up Bassett.
Yep.
But other people, they might be like, Bassett, you know, he's like a top 50 guy. I can get him later. You know, they're not going to pick him up. And maybe that's where you take advantage of the market inefficiency and pick up Bassett, you know, a round or two earlier because you know he can produce as good as the guys like Logan Webb and things like that.
Yeah, I agree. If the discrepancy in their value is where Bassett's going much later than Webb, then obviously I'm going to wait. But I think both of them in my rankings will be top 30 pitchers. I genuinely think that I'll have Bassett and Webb both as top 30 because this season, the one thing from pitching was consistency, and we lacked it everywhere, and no one really had consistency every single start, and Bassett and Webb give you that consistency to a point where I want to make it a point to have at least one of them in my staff next season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that wraps up the weekly performance recap from this past week, and this wraps up the final episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball for the regular season in 2023. We have no streamers to recommend because, quite frankly, there's no one to use because the fantasy season is over. So that wraps everything up. Remember, we will have our off-season podcast beginning October 13th, and they will be bi-weekly episodes. So keep that in mind. Listen to us in the off-season. We would appreciate it. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review. And before you go, make sure you follow us on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL. And send us your comments and questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter or X at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter or X at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please, once again, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week, and that's all for this season. We hope that you enjoyed every episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball, and we will see you all in the offseason. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.